Clear for takeoff, runway 28 left, fly runway heading.
Welcome to another brand new episode of Living in Flight, your go-to podcast for everything in the world of aviation. Exclusive interview conversations with industry professionals and enthusiasts. Strap on your seatbelt.
Put on your headset.
And get ready for Living in Flight.
Welcome back to another episode of Living in Flight. It's Drew and Matt, and we're ready to get another show started.
On the menu today, we've got Troy Redding, the owner of Holman's Table at the St. Paul Airport.
Airport restaurants are one of the coolest things a pilot can go visit. Throughout my training, I know I had my fair share of $100 hamburgers. And Troy is here to tell us today about what it's like to run an airport restaurant.
Let's get this going.
I grew up in southwestern Minnesota on a farm. Moved up to the Twin Cities. Got the proverbial summer job at a restaurant and never left.
Did you know that you wanted to be in the restaurant industry forever?
No. It was a summer job. I was got hired as a bartender at TGI Fridays. Nice. And turned that into a 25-year career with them.
Oh, wow.
Did everything. Bartended, served, cooked, managed, became a multi-unit manager. And then left them and went to Blue Plate Restaurant Company, independent restaurant group in the Twin Cities here. Spent 4 years opening up 4 restaurants with them as their VP of Ops. And then in 2015, went out on my own.
Nice.
Which Blue Plate ones did you do?
I opened Scoozy. It was the first one I opened, followed by Lowry, then Freehouse, and the Blue Barn. Of the State Fair.
We love Freehouse.
Freehouse. That was quite a build. I'll tell you, that was a project.
Why is that?
You know, putting a brewery in a restaurant in an existing building is an engineering feat. I'll put it that way.
Sure. Yeah.
The grain bin out front, I put that up with my dad.
No way.
Yeah, no, really. He came up to help us figure out how to do it.
When did the Freehouse go up? When did you guys?
That would have been 2012, 13, okay. Right in there.
Somewhere in there. Okay, that would make sense. That's when I moved to the cities, 2013.
We had lunch there recently, right? It was like a while back.
Last summer.
I think it was.
Like a windy day or something, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like a dinner, really.
Yep.
Oh, no, yeah.
There's so much food.
Oh, yeah, we did. But no, Freehouse is great.
But it's not as, yeah.
Well, that's cool. So then after 2015 comes around. Did you go to school for anything related to?
No, I have an electronics degree and went to school for computer science.
Okay.
But never quite finished.
Never. Yeah.
Not related to restaurant management.
Not at all.
So then in 2015... what happened?
I left Blue Plate. We parted ways, and I opened Rock Elm Tavern in Plymouth, Minnesota.
And so was that a solo adventure?
I have a partner. My best friend is my partner. He doesn't do restaurants. He loves to eat and drink.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided we'd go into business together and develop a place he could go to.
Yeah. And did Rock Elm come from a place that, or from a idea that you've always had? Was it just kind of what's the idea behind Rock Elm?
Well, a couple of things. So I lived in Plymouth, and he lives in Plymouth, and Plymouth is not exactly a food mecca. And I had come from Blue Plate that was, you know, independent urban restaurants. And our goal was to develop a place we wanted to go to that was, you know, more urban-like.
So you're looking at a second restaurant. What makes you think, airport?
Well, the second one we were looking at was the second Rock Elm, which ended up being the third one. We opened in Maple Grove in September of 2018. In between there, I got a call from a friend of mine who had been to a presentation at the main airport for concessionaires. He got invited, and Joe Harris got up and spoke about, he was running the St. Paul Airport at that point, and spoke about wanting a restaurant at Holman's Table or at Holman Field. Mm-hmm. And so my buddy calls me and goes, I just heard something that's really interesting, but not my wheelhouse. Yeah. He has a bunch of Subway franchises. And he goes, but I thought of you. So I went out there with my wife first, got lost.
Yeah.
It was like, so we went in, looked at the facility and left. And she goes, wow, that's cool. And I'm like, yeah, but who the hell's going to come out here?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And so ended up going out with my partner next and my chef at that point. And same thing, you know, this is really cool, but who's going to come out here and how are they going to find it and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up, you know, talking and struck a deal and developed Holman's Table, which is truly a destination restaurant.
Yeah.
Because you don't drive by it, as you know.
Right.
Yeah, because even just getting to the airport, even just getting to the St. Paul Airport can be tough.
Yeah.
Because you have, like, there's, like, a bridge, and then you got to weave around a bit.
Yeah.
It's the first time I
went. I've never even driven to – I could get to Holman's Table by airplane way easier than I could by car.
I end up over, like, Play-Doh, heading back towards Minneapolis.
But so what's the history of the building that it's in? That was something.
It was WPA project, built in 39, something like that. And at that point, the St. Paul Airport and the Minneapolis Airport were two airports. And then when the MAC developed, they made the choice that the Minneapolis would become the international airport. The building itself, the historic terminal building, was built in 39 as a WPA project. The first black architect in the state designed it. The limestone came from the cliffs right across the river. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So a lot of history to it.
Yeah. And at that point, they had just – so when they came to – or when they proposed that they wanted to open the restaurant or they wanted a restaurant there – was the building just empty because they had shifted all of their terminal stuff to the different FBOs and all the different buildings there on the airport?
Yeah, so they had an administrative person there. Mm-hmm. And then both wings of the terminal building were essentially, you know, not used and had been offices, and there were different offices in there. But essentially, the side that we developed the restaurant on was originally a restaurant and had a restaurant in till 99.
Okay.
The last version of it closed. So the kitchen part was there, the shell of it. And then the plaster on the front part was falling down and, you know, in disrepair and stuff everywhere.
Can you talk to us a little bit about what the process with the MAC is like on that? Did you have to come with a presentation? Did multiple people want it? Is it like a solicitation they put out? What does that actually look like?
Well, that's a great question. Actually, yes. Joe Harris was operating the airport, and he was hell bent on putting a restaurant in there prior to the Super Bowl. And it was his vision that really got it done. But they were sourcing an operator. So I met Joe. He sold me on the project, sold my partner on the project. So my partner and I ended up going to the MAC building to do a presentation on. He's like, just do a couple of slides, you know.
Yeah.
Who are you? What will you do?
Yeah.
And so I walk into this room, this conference room, and there's literally 20 people sitting around the table. And I looked at Joe and I'm like, what did you just do to me? So I start our presentation, and we introduce ourselves and get through the first slide, and this lady sitting over in the corner asks me a question. And so I answer the question, and we talk a little bit. And she goes, oh, go back to your presentation. Keep going. And so I'd start up again, and then she'd ask another question. And it became pretty apparent that she was interviewing me at that point, because then it was – turned into probably a half-hour conversation between her and myself.
Oh, wow. In front of the 19 other people.
Exactly. Nobody else saying anything. Yeah. My partner not saying anything, and Joe not saying anything. And she goes, all right, everybody take out their calendars. Here's what we're doing next.
Oh, wow.
And that was the beginning.
And did you come to them with the idea already? Like, was your presentation Holman's table, or
no,
did you?
No. We essentially, the presentation was more about who we were, what Rock Elm was, what we thought Holman's table could be. But I, you know,
you just all you we called knew it restaurant.
It was
going to
be a destination
time.
Restaurant. And you know, had to be a bit more upscale reason for people to come.
From inception of this idea for the restaurant to where it is now, how much has it changed?
Well, with any restaurant,
been consistent, you know, like
no, not at all. Restaurants evolve, and I think you open a restaurant, no matter what restaurant it is, and you have this vision of, well, here's what I'm going to do. Here's how, you know, here's who's going to come. Here's what they're going to want, and within a month, you know what they want and what they're looking for, and it evolves into who's coming in and what do they drive it. So Holman's became this, true spot, this, you know, hidden gem, as people call it in St. Paul. And, you know, we have a lot of regular guests, and everybody that comes in there new is like, wow, this is hidden gem. I wish I would have known about this. Right.
And what was the initial clientele that you guys thought to attract to at that point, right? Like opening a restaurant here, were you aiming for, you know, date night people, aviation lovers?
Yeah, because your average pilot's definitely not going to an airport restaurant for looking at like a, you know, that nice of a meal. You're going
because
an omelet or a milkshake.
Right, most airport restaurants aren't like Holman's Table. So like, you know, what's the...
Was there initial surprise? Yeah.
And what did it what is it now transitioned to?
Well, initially we thought we would get the people that worked out there, aviation people, and then obviously downtown St. Paul business people, state capital people, because it was back in the 90s was where legislatures left and went to have their lunch meetings.
Sure.
So we really thought that that's what was going to happen. Where what it turned into was more of a clientele that wanted good food, good service, but wanted that aviation experience. Or a lot of people are like, oh, my dad used to fly here, or my grandpa used to bring me here, or, you know, all of those connections to, you know, the field itself really drove what our clientele is.
What was the initial response from the pilots coming in for the $100 hamburger?
You know, I think
they caught off guard.
I think they were caught a bit off guard. You know, they anticipate a greasy spoon and they get this higher end experience.
Yeah.
But you know, we Valentine's night we had probably four airplanes sitting on the ground.
Oh, wow.
People fly in and have dinner. We do helicopter rides there. I shouldn't say we. Minnesota Helicopter does helicopter rides there. And so that's a driver as well, this date night thing.
Yeah, that's actually super cool.
Yeah, we saw on the menu that you have the $300
burger.
Which, frankly, that's what every airport restaurant should have, because the $100 hamburger is impossible.
What kind of plane are you renting?
Right. Yeah, what are you renting? Right. That is $100 stop rate to go there, right? So a $300 hamburger is actually way more realistic.
Probably a bit underpriced.
Yet. It is, depending on what you're doing.
Probably
where you're
pushing 500.
From.
I was.
Yeah.
So would you say that how much of your clientele even now is flying in on the average night? Like, let's say we were to go over there tonight. How many? Mm-hmm. Okay, well, tonight's a terrible night because there's a blizzard, right? Yes.
But like, say in the middle of June or July on a nice summer, you know, evening.
Oh, I would say you may see a plane or two.
Okay.
Each night.
Sure.
So without that many pilots coming through the door, how do you kind of keep the aviation culture of the restaurant alive? Does it just help to be at an airport or
absolutely? You know,
can you slap a few planes on the wall and people will be like, "Oh, look at that Jekko!" Or
exactly, and so in the lobby we have a loop going with all the history of Holman Field and Speed Holman and Amelia Earhart and you know all, and Cora who was the first female pilot. Licensed pilot in the state.
Yeah.
We named our lobby lounge area after her.
Yeah. And that's a recently new thing, right? Because you've got Cora's Lounge, mm-hmm. and now the Earhart Room.
The Earhart Room, and then Holman's Table.
And yep. Holman's Table. And so talk a little bit more about each of those.
Yeah, I might be
for all of them.
I might be a bad Minnesotan, but I didn't know that Earhart had a connection out here.
She actually flew in here a few times, and had this relationship, but knew Charles Holman, and you know, okay. they yeah. flew at the same time.
That makes sense. And I think you have a lot of that information on your website.
Mm-hmm.
There's a good bit of it, but, so it's really interesting. There's all of this aviation history tied to this. Do you have any ties to aviation at all?
My brother is a private pilot.
Okay. That's about it.
Yeah.
So where did you lean on, or where did you pull from this stuff to incorporate these names, these people, these ideas, and find all this history? Did that come from just you doing the research of the St. Paul Airport, Minneapolis, Minnesota, like the whole works?
Yeah, the person that helped me with the concept development, mm-hmm. As far as the brand, the logo, that sort of thing, really her and I dove into the history of the airfield and learned a lot about it. And then, of course, Joe and the operators there love to share their stories and the history of it. So, really, it was research. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, what do you think is the hardest part of opening a restaurant at an airport? Then,
traffic.
Yeah.
Short answer.
Yeah.
Let's dive into that one a bit more.
So, you know, that was the hardest part. About it was such a destination, you know, place. You don't drive by it, you drive to it, mm-hmm. or you fly to it. That was the hardest part, was getting the location out there and a reason to come out there. But you know, the Super Bowl helped with that. We had some great press coverage because you know, so many private planes are flying in there, you know, we just built on that.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Drew and I have talked about just throwing ideas around of things we want to do.
Seriously,
and stuff.
Considered, we've applied for our loan.
Definitely not. But right, one of the ideas that we've just randomly thown around was like an airport restaurant. And yeah, one of the thoughts in my head is, how do you get people to come there that, you know, obviously they have to like the food or hear about it from other people, but how do you get them to come there when they don't, you know, most people don't think about going to the St. Paul Airport for dinner, right? So it's like...
Or if you're not a pilot, you might not feel included or something like that. So how do you
build that?
Yeah.
Well, it starts with, you know, having some connection to the restaurant industry. And, you know, I think we have some credibility out there and in the restaurant community. So, opening a destination place is really, about trying to put a place in that matches the atmosphere you're in, or the neighborhood you're in, or the location you're at. With what that community is and what's missing, you know, what's not there. So when you're looking at an airport location, it's, well, obviously there's not a restaurant there. If it's a new airport or an airport that isn't serviced. But it's really deciding, like if you were looking at Eden Prairie, it's, you know, what's the history of the airport? What's the neighborhood around here? Who's going to come, and how do you talk to them?
So did you go to any other airport restaurants for, not maybe inspiration might be the wrong word, but for kind of reference or for figuring out what the atmosphere of yours needed to be?
No, I've been to plenty since we've opened Holman's Table.
Let's talk about that.
But we didn't have the opportunity to really do a lot of research on airport restaurants prior to jumping into this thing. Time moved pretty quickly. But since then, you know, been to Milwaukee, been to Memphis, been to, a few other places. Anytime we drive through a place or, you know, or we're on vacation, we'll look to see if there's any airport restaurants.
Stop and swing by.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
What do you think? What sets the good ones apart?
Well, I haven't been to one that's been the same as another. I mean, they're all very different. One was a brewery with pizza. One was, a greasy spoon diner. They all vary, based on, what the location really feels like, I guess.
What, so you talked about the speed of, right? You didn't have the opportunity to go to these other restaurants beforehand. What was that timeline like from the idea when your buddy showed up to the meeting to opening, right? I know you've mentioned and said that it was quick, right? And they wanted to get it done before the Super Bowl. Yep. And so how fast was that timeline?
So I got the first call from my buddy in February of 17.
Wow.
So and less we than opened a year. In second week of January of 18.
Wow. What was the hardest part to get done in that timeline?
Yeah. What do we not know as your average customer who just thinks, build a restaurant and buy some ingredients? Right. What are we missing?
Really the concept development, you know, what's the logo? What's the signage? What are the colors? What's the furniture look like? What's the feel of the build out? Right. How does it fit into the building? So all of that was, we've got to move. So, I hired a person to help develop the color concept and the logo and the signage and all of that. I had a friend who, does interior design. And then I have a person that I work with to, develop the space, from a equipment and table layout. So really it was the four of us working together to, develop the atmosphere and the concept, and then working with the chef to develop food and bar staff to develop cocktails and wine list and all of those sorts of things. So
did you, how did you select the chef for Holman's Table? Was it one that you worked with from Rock Elm? Was it a different, how did you approach that?
Well, good question.
Did they have to have a pilot's license?
They did not have a pilot's license. No,
that's a requirement.
None of the three did. So when I first went to look at it, I had a chef at Rock Elm that really was going to help develop the food and the concept itself. And then we parted ways. He left. And I went through two other chefs trying to find the right person to develop the food that I was looking for. I wanted a bit more upscale than Rock Elm is, but I wanted it approachable. I knew the flavor profiles I wanted, and I wanted it to be interesting. The first chef I hired was way over the top, way too fine dining. So it just wasn't clicking. So I moved on to another one. Who was stuck in the 80s. And so
sure, yeah.
I couldn't get him to develop the plating and the food that I wanted.
So now you've got two extremes.
Yep.
Right.
So I landed on somebody that really got us open and helped finish developing the menu. And he lasted about a year. Went through two other people after that. And then about 3 years ago, I hired the current chef. And that's when we really nailed it.
So I kind of want to jump back to something here, the whole idea of airport restaurants. There's not many in Minnesota, at least, and even around here. And it's actually kind of a really fun thing for pods to do is go fly to them and eat. Why do you not think there are more airport restaurants in Minnesota as an airport restaurant owner?
I would say even in general, right?
Like yeah.
you'll see on these different Facebook groups, right? And people have created lists of all of the $100 hamburger, quote unquote locations in all of these different states. And it's not that long of a list. There's just not that many of them.
Yeah, and I've seen one of those lists, and one of those is, yeah, if you hop this fence and then walk a
right.
block,
and that's how a lot of them are, right? I've been to a lot of
them. But that's exactly it, right? The location, an airport location isn't conducive to drive-by traffic, to foot traffic, to really being able to get that constant lunch, dinner crowd, right? Because there isn't an airport that you're just driving by. You're going to the airport. So that is the tough part, and then finding space on an airfield to actually put a restaurant. I mean, really, you've got to partner with somebody that either has the space or the inclination to do a restaurant. And, you know, that's where we were lucky with St. Paul. The Mac wanted the restaurant, and the location was there, you know, the building was there. So that you just don't go build a restaurant out of the airport. You right. sort of got to find something to build it in.
That's a good point.
Yeah. I never considered the whole, you never drive to the airport, especially right. if the airport has like no Delta service or something. Why would ever?
Yeah.
Why go?
The other day it was the airport that I was flying out of the other day was pretty far away from like the actual town. And I'm like, yeah, there's no reason for anybody to come out here, right? You're just passing cornfield, and it's, you know, it's got airline service in and out.
Sure.
It's like, but there's no reason to be out here aside from going, you know, to or from the airport to leave.
That's like Madison. They have a restaurant there, but I mean, think about how far that airport is from Madison.
Right. It's not. Yeah. Especially when, you know, most people go to Madison, they go downtown,
right?
Like they go to the state capitol and they walk it around down there. The restaurant at Madison is actually really good.
It's
a cool spot once you get in there.
Once you get there, once you've made that determination, I'm going out to the airport.
Right.
For lunch.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's a place that I've flown into, right? But that's easy for a pilot because it's like you have to go to the airport, right? Like you don't have other options. So.
Have you given thought to any other airports in Minnesota that you might consider this at, or is Holman's kind of a one and done for you?
I'd for sure do another airport restaurant.
Really? Can you tell us more about kind of your thoughts or desires on that?
You know, it's finding the right partner, right? It's finding the building, the partner.
Well,
to
Matt
do
here
it.
Has some great ideas.
Well, great. As long as they revolve around the facility itself.
You're going to have to build a facility.
This food is good. Oh, good, great partner.
However, people drive by that airport and the traffic is, but we can talk about that later.
I think we've got a formula that works. If we would find the right opportunities, I absolutely would do another one.
Are you able to tell us that any cities you've looked, any place, any regions you've considered, or some
sure?
Yeah, let's pry a little bit here.
I would love to be at Eden Prairie if the opportunity arose.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's a great airport. People drive right by it all the time.
Yeah.
Well, there's traffic. Eden Prairie is a great community, affluent, and it's a well-used airport. So
yeah, there's a lot of traffic.
All of those things play into, it would work to have a restaurant here.
It's a little tough. There's not a whole lot of open space on the field.
There's not a building today that you could put a restaurant in. No.
Let's say you started to explore that in seriousness. What does that process look like from day zero here?
It comes down
to identifying the building. It's the first part. Because you can't go to the Mac until you have a building idea.
So if there's a space, if there's a building and a desire to have a restaurant, those are the first things. Right. And that takes somebody else other than me. I'm not able to go, I want to be at that airport. What land can I have? That's not how this works. There isn't enough profit to go buy a piece of land on an airport build a restaurant. I mean, there has to be other things wrapped around it to make it a viable business.
Right. Yeah.
Any other places other than Eden Prairie that kind of stand out to you?
Well, you know, not really. No, not in-state. You know, if you look at Buffalo, maybe, you know, it's a developing community. The airport's accessible there.
I'd say it's right by the main strip.
Right.
Everything
so
right there.
That could be an opportunity, I would suppose.
And I guess, you know, depending on the, yeah, that's actually really interesting because depending on the type of restaurant that you put there too, you get a lot of general aviation community going to Buffalo.
Yeah. If you were to,
you know, I don't know if a upscale restaurant is the move there or not.
Correct.
Right. But yeah, that's actually really interesting because, you know, you hear people all the time doing pancake breakfasts, fly-ins, right, at all of these different private little strips, grass strips, small airports, right?
So like that's
a, yeah, he's been to, and that's a really interesting, obviously that's not around a restaurant generally, that's an organization or, you know, somebody out of their hangar just, you know,
Doing something.
Yeah, I think if you were to build something out there, you'd be building a restaurant for the actual aviators.
Right.
Less so, you know, the people, you know, saying, oh, don't go to the Mindot cafeteria, come down to Holman's. You'd be building it for the people that on Saturday are out there talking on fingers.
But again, yeah, that's tough because that's a is a Saturday-Sunday dynamic.
It's a weekend only
most
thing,
of those so. People are, yeah, they're working Monday through Friday, and then Saturday-Sunday they're looking for the best airport to fly to for a breakfast flying.
Mm-hmm. And breakfast is not a very profitable day part.
So. Sure. Yeah. Well, maybe we change it to
a very upscale breakfast.
Instead of pancake flying, it's a steak flying.
It's a steak flying.
Right. There you go. Right? Yeah. Something like you definitely get people to eat that.
Can you tell before we go into our this or that game, can you tell us a little bit more about your partnership with Minnesota Helicopters?
So Chris Webb, who owns Minnesota Helicopters, approached us prior to COVID. I mean, how many years is that now?
Two.
2 weeks ago. That's when we started the whole flattening the curtain.
Just a couple weeks ago, right? So Chris approached us and with the idea of doing helicopter rides out at Holman Field. And you know, sort of partnering on the advertising of it. And he had this big scheme and like, yeah, you're out of your mind. Yeah. You know, who's going to do that, right? Yeah. Have dinner, get on a helicopter. He was right.
Yeah.
You know, it works. So, you know, I bit and it was like, yeah, we can explore this. And so we did some signage at XL Energy Center and, you know, He started showing up on Saturday nights and, you know, people started to do it and spend the money on dinner and a flight. And we expanded prior to COVID, we expanded into Friday nights and did both Friday and Saturday nights. And we're back to doing Saturday nights, hope to bring Fridays online maybe this summer again. So
people book that as a combo? Is it dinner and a helicopter ride in one?
We keep it individual, but we do sell dinner and flight gift cards. Okay. You get a Minnesota Helicopter gift card, you get a Holman's Table gift card, and we sell it as a package for $225.
Got it. That's really cool.
Have you ever, as a passenger in an airplane, flown into St. Paul and then taxied over to your restaurant?
I haven't. Nor have I been on one of Chris's helicopters.
I was going to ask. Well,
I keep talking about it. I'm like, I want to learn how to fly. And you know.
Well, the fixed wing are way cooler and way more fun.
Yeah.
So. All right. So, no, I haven't. You know, trying to find time in the day is really the challenge.
Well, now you know a couple of guys that know how to fly airplanes. So,
all right.
Make that happen.
I'm going to hold you to that.
Hey, that sounds great. Before we get into that, I want to talk a little bit. I'm curious about, obviously we're talking about Holman's Table, but I'm curious about your food truck. You guys,
the Rock Elm Rig.
The Rock Elm Rig.
Yeah.
So what is that? So tell us about that, how long that's been around and what that transition looks like from going from brick and mortar to now mobile, right? On wheels.
Right. So, the rig came along because of COVID and our second shutdown, state shutdown for our industry. I kept all of my salaried managers on payroll, so I was paying them without any income coming in. And I was like, maybe we should buy a food truck so we have something to do, is really how it played out. And so we got it up and running. We bought it like in February of last year, got it up and running by May. And
did you guys work with I know there's companies that like you can go to. I've seen one, I've driven past one, and you can buy the food truck. They'll like outfit it for you, and then you have the food truck already, like everything set up in it, the grill, the freezers, whatever you need. And then it shows up and you brand it, or what do they brand it? I don't know. Did you guys do all of that on your own? Did you?
No, we went and looked for used food trucks.
Okay. So it's already done.
Yep. And so we bought ours from a guy, Moe's Barbecue in Colorado. And he had this truck sitting out at the Red Rocks for 5-6 years, had a contract with the city. So it really sat there. But with COVID that, you know, nobody's going to the Red Rocks. So, he put it up for sale because he was trying to, you know, keep his brick and mortars alive, just didn't have the bandwidth. We were looking for an opportunity. So we bought it sight unseen, and, you know, pictures, and then, had a guy, flatbed it over and, it showed up. I'm like, okay, there's a truck. So, so we had to do some things to it to license it in the state, had to add a couple of pieces to it and wrap it. But really that was about it.
And then the food in it, is it the same stuff that you'd sell at Rock Elm? Did you put a twist on it?
Based on it, but we put a twist on it. So we do what we call the rig burger, which is a burger we designed specifically for the truck and with the intent of we'd only sell that one out of the truck. So, but we do other things. We do some smoked meats. We do pulled pork, mini donuts.
Speaking of language.
depends upon the group that we're serving, you know.
Sure. What do you guys, where do you try and take the rig? What do you guys do? Do you guys set up shop with, do you partner with different, I know some places partner with different locations and they'll do a Saturday afternoon lunch. They'll, you know, there's obviously food truck festivals, the Uptown Food Truck Festival, the North Loop Food Truck Festival, all these different things, different events. What do you guys try and focus on? Just try to be as much as you can.
So last year was really a learning curve for us because, you know, it was our first time into the food truck business. And so we did everything from neighborhood pre-sales and sales to food. We did a couple of food truck festivals, Anoka being one of them, graduation parties, private events, lunches for businesses, you know, where the business would approach us and say, hey, I want to buy lunch for all my employees. So, you know, bigger companies. But and then, of course, sit out at some breweries and do that sort of thing. Those are tougher.
Sure.
Because you never know what kind of traffic you're going to get. So
yeah, that was something I was thinking about, the demand planning for a food truck. How do you, you know, if you don't have any experience with that before, how do you even go about, you know, you go to these food trucks and half the time, if you get there a little too late in the day, you know, they're sold out of five of the seven items, right? It's like, you know, and you don't want to have way more than you need, but how do you even go about remotely demand planning for some of those things?
The easiest is to pre-sell. So that you know what you have going on, or to be at an event where you know what kind of traffic you're going to get.
Sure.
You know, those are the easiest things and it's a learning curve, right? We learn a lot on what not to do, where not to go, when not to go to certain places. It's a true learning curve, and having brick and mortars, it's a very different business.
Yeah.
You know, most food truck people are either independents and they own their truck and that's how they're making their living, or, you know, it's a restaurant group that puts their truck out there as not necessarily a moneymaker, but marketing, advertising, you know, another a business to their business.
Yeah, another way to get their name out there. What's the like throughput that you can get on the food truck versus like at the restaurant? How many people are you serving per hour? How fast can you get stuff out there? You know, what's the?
Really, you try and match your number of people on the truck to what your guest flow is. So private event where you know how many people you're going to have is a whole lot easier. Mm-hmm. Food truck festival is easier because you know you're going to have constant traffic going by. So you max out your number of people on the truck to, you know, 3-4 people. But, mm-hmm. You know, individual events, breweries, you know, it's hard to make any money if you have more than one person on the truck.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Is a food truck something people could just start up on a whim? Or does it require a bit more planning than people would think it does?
All sorts of people start it up on a whim, just like they start restaurants and then they close them because mm-hmm. they don't make any money. To have it be a viable business, like anything, you know, I can go fly planes and make money or teach people how to fly and make money. I mean, that's, if you know your business, you make money. If you know your margins, you can make money.
That makes sense.
I guess really quickly, I did have one more question. Do you think you could talk to us just about the COVID recovery, what that's been like for you? Did you like have some of your restaurants recover?
I'll let you know when we recover.
When we recover, yeah. No. That's the point, right? Like, have some of your restaurants been in the process of recovering? Have they been asymmetric? You've seen better performance
Absolutely,
out of others,
no.
or
it's varied. So we went into COVID in March 17th of 2020, right? We opened our fourth restaurant, Sugar and Spice Sweetery, which was a sweet shop bakery, in January of 2020. And 6 weeks later got shut down. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, tried to do the takeout thing. In July, we shut that one down permanently. So that one did not recover. Plymouth has been the strongest, recovery. And really I believe it was because it was most established, had the most established clientele, sat in a community, you know, neighborhood community, which helped prop that up. Had good takeout, because the community was supporting us and then came back quickly as the community wanted to get back online. Maple Grove was the toughest because it was our newest and least established, and not sitting in a community. So that one's been difficult to recover, and still I would say is probably at about 70% of pre-COVID. You know, so we aren't there yet. And Holman's Table, you know, we've shut down a couple of different times. A whole lot longer than we have shut down the other ones. And the Mac's been a great partner, allowing us to do that, helping us to shut down so that we're losing less money. You know, the restaurant itself is coming back okay, but the Earhart Room and Coors Lounge, mm-hmm. you know, it's we rely on groups and events to supplement the small restaurant, right? So as that comes back online, as we get the patio open there again, Holman's will be fine and recover. But
and what do you go?
Well, I need a place to do my groom's dinner.
Yeah, that's
Holman's
what I was,
table.
Right,
no,
that's what I was
sure.
getting at. Right. What? So obviously, Cora's Lounge and the Earhart Room. You know, I guess plug for yourself. What do you guys? You use the Earhart Room for you? I see that you guys have done small weddings there. You host. Private events, right? What are these rooms about? What can people use them for?
We've done a lot of things. So we'll do sellouts, and I'll shut down the restaurant and sell out to a group and, you know, use the whole building. We did a full-blown wedding where they got married outside, came inside, had a three-course dinner, then set up Coors as the dance area. So they had the whole space all day long. Wow, what else have we done? We've done groom's dinners. We do birthday parties. We do business lunches, business dinners, holiday events, car shows.
Oh, wow, yeah.
The Red Bull, Flu Tag, pre-event we did.
That stuff's so cool.
So we set up on the tarmac. We had the Crown Rally North kickoff event, so 100 Ferraris and...
Yeah.
You know, cars that I can't afford sitting out on the tarmac. I mean,
yeah.
It was we do cool stuff out there.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's good to know for people. But there you go, Drew. That's for the groomsman dinner.
Yeah, well, sure. My dad's been bugging me about that one.
Well, there you go. Tell him
he wanted to rent a boat, and I was like, we're not going out on a boat.
Hey, it's very Midwestern, but
yeah, it is. But you're
Holden's Table sounds
right?
Great. Earhart Room, Coors Lounge.
Yep.
Yeah, there we go.
Speaking your name. All right, should we do a little of this or that?
I'm not opposed.
Cool.
Yeah. All right, so we have this or that for you, and try to just have a little bit of fun here.
Sure.
All right, so our first one is Five Guys or Culver's?
Culver's.
Nice.
No, why is that? Wow. That's because that's the right answer. That is the right answer.
I didn't know there's a right or wrong.
Actually, we do have right or wrong answers here, yes.
Okay.
It's this or that with a twist.
With a twist. My style. Culver's, it's a Wisconsin joint, and my wife's from Wisconsin. How's that?
Perfect.
Perfect.
I love it. I'm a big Culver's.
Doesn't matter how we got there because you arrived at the right answer.
Yeah. All right. So now with that, Culver's and In-N-Out.
In-N-Out.
There we go. Again, two for two.
That's what we're talking about.
Now here's as a restaurateur, you might be able to help us out here. Why? I grew up in Southern California, so I love In-N-Out.
Mm-hmm.
Why is In-N-Out so much better than every other burger? What do they do differently, in your opinion?
The animal sauce.
Yeah.
So it's the sauce. I always thought it was the toasted bun.
Because Culver's does toast.
Why does Cane's have traffic? The sauce.
The sauce.
So you think it's all off the sauce? Interesting.
I think we talked about this the other day because I had Culver's the other day and I had In-N-Out in December and January like 10 times.
I had a couple days ago. I was out in LA for a day.
Yeah.
Well, think about this. $300 burger at Holman's, mm-hmm. foie gras, and the sauce.
Yeah.
It's not the burger.
Right.
It's what's on it.
Right.
Right.
And to me, like, yeah, it's the... You know, everybody loves the word moist, but like there's a whole lot going on with like an In-N-Out burger that just...
I just think it's like perfectly packaged.
Yeah.
It's like it just looks so good when it comes out of that little red basket. Actually, on the topic of food trucks, an In-N-Out food truck is equally chaotic as the restaurant.
They have those?
They have those.
Oh, really?
They do have In-N-Out food trucks. I've been
they go to like graduation parties.
They'll go to like graduation parties and it is equally loud, chaotic, people screaming. There's like 20 people in there working. Just like it's like they displaced one
and had to
be. Yeah, they all got their hats on. Yeah.
For sure.
All right. Chipotle or Qdoba?
Neither.
Ooh.
That's a fair take.
Why? Why? Just not a...
Just not a fan. I mean, if I'm going for Mexican, I want authentic.
It's like Taco Bell.
The bane of my existence. Or my kids' favorite places.
Well, I think it's weird because they did that study and they found that like Taco Bell is one of the healthier fast food restaurants.
It is.
Well,
it
does sound to it, yeah.
Yeah, I don't... Great F meat. I don't know.
Very weird side note here. Have you been to Rubio's?
No.
Gotta go to Rubio's.
Next time you go to Southern California.
If you're in the West Coast.
Rubio's, okay.
Rubio's.
They do
I'm going out there in, 8 weeks to San Diego. Is there one there?
There are plenty of Rubio's.
My fiance is from San Diego, and when we go out there, it's, to me, Board and Brew and Rubio's are, like, the two places that I have to go to anytime I go to San Diego.
Right.
And
so we go there a lot. I like to make fun of him because he can't go to any of them without posting on social media that he went. I've seen the same sandwich picture a couple times now, right?
Yep.
It's awesome.
Yeah. So my oldest lives out in San Diego and moved out there in September. So
yeah,
we're going to see him. So
San Diego's awesome.
Rubio's
and Borden Brew. I'll write it down.
Yeah, all right. Cool. And then you can can email us late and you'll be like, wow, you changed my life for the better.
And you got to get the sauce because Drew has been to Borden Brew a million times.
I'm not big on the sauce. I think the sandwich, I'm a sandwich purist.
You didn't even try this?
I'm a purist.
Have you even tried it?
There's no need.
No.
It was a turkey avocado sandwich. It didn't need anything more than that.
Turkey. My wife will love that.
Yes.
That's two of her favorite things.
You'll have to follow up with us on your Board and Brew and Rubio's adventure. The fish taco, original fish taco at Rubio's.
The original fish taco.
That's a good
one. Actually, the mahi-mahi one. They had a mahi-mahi one. That was really good.
We do a mahi at Rock Hill. Taco. Yep.
Yeah, so you'll have to – obviously, Rubio's is a little more of a like a chainy. Like, you're going to walk in and, you know, it doesn't have the same feel of like a Taco Bell. It's much nicer.
Yeah, you
nicer.
Actually wait more than 5 minutes for your food.
But it's set up almost the exact same way as like a classic fast food restaurant.
Gotcha. Cool.
So you'll see that. Yeah. What about number four?
Subway or Jimmy John's?
Jimmy John's.
Oh,
although I haven't been to Subway since the refresh.
You know what's okay? So, so when I was in training, I did a 4-day stretch where I ate no other meals than Subway.
Yeah,
I'd have 6 inches for lunch, for dinner, and then after I got out of the sim at like 2 a.m., I'd have another 6-inch sandwich.
Gotcha.
I don't know. I like Jimmy John's. Subway does.
I don't know. Subway's nice because it's customizable.
That Italian herbs and cheese bread.
So yeah. All right, number five, Holman's Table or Rock Elm?
Wow.
Sophie's choice.
Holman's Table is the coolest restaurant in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
And St. Paul. It is the coolest spot. Might not be the best, but it is a one-of-kind experience.
Yeah. And
so the answer is Holman's Table.
Depends upon what you want for dinner.
So if you're going to Holman's Table, what are you getting? If you're going to Rock Elm, what are you getting?
If I'm going to Rock Elm, I'm getting a burger. Okay. And I'll move between those. If I am going to Holman's, I'm getting elk.
Ooh, yeah. Ooh. I like elk. Drew is kind of indifferent.
You've got to get there quick because that is – spring menu, they'll come off.
There's not much elk on the menus out in LA.
Yeah.
No, probably.
I didn't grow up going out to dinner and regularly eating elk.
Cool. Well, that's good.
We were eyeing the
poutine.
The poutine.
The poutine looks
great starter.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. You can't go wrong with anything on that menu. Garrett is so talented. Yeah. So talented.
It looks, the whole menu looks awesome. We were talking about all this stuff, we had it up and looking through it. And yeah, definitely need to get over there.
You have to have the mushroom toast.
See, I'm not a mushroom.
I'm
Drew
a
likes,
big mushroom.
Drew likes mushrooms.
I like mushrooms.
And my fiance loves mushrooms.
This mushroom toast, this was a throwaway, right? We're opening up Holman's Table, trying to slam together this menu because I'm on my fourth chef, as you know.
Yeah.
So we need another appetizer. I'm like, let's take the Rock Elm burger and take the burger off. And
that's how you came up.
That's how we came up with mushroom toast. Developed some of the components of it, but really, that's what it is.
Drew's pulling it open. He's pulling open the menu right now.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
All right. The last one was going to be a this or that.
We'll do it,
but it's a little too limiting.
Do it, and then we'll open it up after.
New York strip. Or ribeye.
If you're choosing those two.
Summer or winter?
All seasons.
No.
All seasons. Okay, fine.
Which one strip in the summer, ribeye in the winter.
Why?
I've enjoyed
many a ribeye in the summer before.
True. So if I'm – if in the summer I'm grilling outside, I prefer to grill a strip. I just like that end result better at home, and a ribeye, I love ribeyes, especially if they have the right marbling and fat content.
Yeah. What about, so then if you're going to wherever you get your meats from, what is the go-to cut of meat for a steak? Is it one of those two?
No, not necessarily. Okay. I mean, I've had
great sirloins.
Yeah. I'm not a big filet.
There we go.
I'm not a filet.
Everybody
guy.
Says I love filet. It's got no flavor.
No, it's got no
flavor.
If
you have to dunk it in sauce, then
that's
then
right.
You shouldn't be eating it.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. Season it, eat it.
Yeah. Oh,
are you a big just like salt guy? Salt and, on the steak, just very basic and then butter and rosemary.
I like more seasonings, you can always go Cajun style, coffee style, Italian style, so I prefer to season it a bit. And then compound butters are killer.
Where it's at. But
all right.
Cool.
Well, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, that was fun.
Thanks for having me.
Cool to learn more.
Well, that's it for today.
Drew, I think I'm ready to go apply for my small business loan.
Really, Matt? We're gonna do it?
Let's do it.
I think it's funny. I just never realized how difficult it is to run a restaurant at an airport, because I think as a pilot, you forget that non-pilots need to stop by and provide business as well.
Yeah, I didn't really think about that. It's a different perspective for sure, and I know it's easier for me to fly to the Holman's Table than it is to drive. I couldn't drive there if I had to.
just in general, though, I mean, it's an interesting thought that, like, you have to have, you know, people that are a supply there year round, because pilots, you know, we're going to come in and out on the weekdays.
Yeah.
We're not really reliable to be there. So it was just interesting. I'd never thought about it from that perspective.
Yeah.
But I think that's it for us today. Don't forget to like and subscribe so you can keep checking back in with us.
This was another episode of Living in Flight. If you liked this episode, please make sure to subscribe for more exclusive aviation content. Have any topic ideas or want to be featured on our podcast? Send us a message at listen@livinginflight.com. Thank you for joining us. And until next time, this is Living in Flight.